The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This episode of the Old Dogs REI Network is brought to you by Mino Studio. Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where cash flow is king. Real estate investing, the means, so you can enjoy your retirement dreams. This is the show where we cut right to the chase. No sales pitch, no long monologues, just simple how-to real estate investing advice so you can earn the passive income you need to enjoy your retirement today. And now, your host and chief old dog, Bill Manicero.
Hello, old dogs, and welcome to
Fun Facts Friday.
This is our once a week, only on Friday show, where we have special episodes not featuring guests, where I will share tricks, tips, terminology, and techniques that will help skyrocket you to real estate investing success. Today's topic is, what is the best real estate investing strategy for older investors? Hey, but before I get started, I just want to touch base with you guys and see how you are doing. Now, I'm recording this, obviously, a little earlier than it airs on Friday. It is Monday. Tomorrow is Election Day. So I have no idea what's going to happen tomorrow. But, provided everything goes well, this podcast will be airing. Don't mean to sound doom and gloom or anything, but hey, they're boarding up the Capitol here, so I don't know what's going to happen. But, you know, we got to laugh about it, right? Because, man, oh, man. Okay, don't want to get into politics here. Okay, well, anyway, I do want to encourage you guys. I don't care what's going on out there. As long as you guys are focused, you guys are getting educated, and you're moving forward, real estate is always going to be here. Unless, of course, the planet blows up or something. And then it wouldn't be worth much. But hey, that's not going to happen, okay? Because I just don't think there's, you know, enough firepower out there to blow up the planet. But hey, okay, I'm just rambling here. It's great to see you. and I can't even see you, okay? Boy, oh boy, this has been a tough week, you can tell. Hey, but I got a great announcement for you, okay? Talk about encouraging stuff. We have the first Old Dog Nation Summit. I think you should call that like World Summit. That'd be kind of cool. Okay, I'm going to change it. Old Dog Nation World Summit. Yeah, we're just revising titles as we go along here. And you're asking, what is the Old Dog Nation World Summit? Well, I don't really know. Other than the fact that we were talking about doing this Zoom call. And I thought, hey, let's just do it. I'm going to schedule it. Whoever wants to be there can be there. There'll be kind of an agenda, but not much. You know, a lot will depend on what happens Election Day. But hey, the idea is really just to get to know each other here and to answer questions. You know, some of you guys are getting out there trying to figure out what kind of strategies to do and a lot of other things. That's what the show's about today. Going to be a good show, by the way. I'm thinking that this will be good. Connecting, we'll get to ask questions. Some of you can share some of your successes and things that you're doing. And then we can network, you know. Hopefully we'll touch base. I don't know how this is going to work. I just got a Zoom account. So I'm not the expert here technically. Hopefully I can recruit somebody that knows better than me what to do. But nonetheless, the date is Wednesday, November 18th. 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, which would be for you East Coasters out there, 9 p.m. Hope it's not too late. But, we're just trying it out, seeing how it goes. And, if it connects and we have some good stuff, hey, we'll maybe open up to like Facebook, you know, meetings and other things too. You never know. But I think the idea here is, hey, we all have something in common. We're investing in real estate. There's also a bunch of us old dogs there too. And you young pups can come to this too. It is, after all, a World Summit event. So it's a Zoom call, okay? So we're going to figure it out as we go along. It'll be fun. And it'll only be an hour. So, you know, don't fret anything. It won't be, and I'm not selling anything. I never sell anything, you know. For the most part, I don't think I sell anything. I don't sell anything. Okay. I'm selling real estate, not selling real estate. Yeah. Sometimes I am selling real estate, but I'm selling the idea of real estate investing for seniors. That's really the 50 plusers out there that want to get out there and shake up the world here. This is the summit to come to. So, okay. Enough of that. Let's jump into our topic. I was going to do a tip of the day, but running low on time here. Okay. What is the best real estate investing strategy for older investors? Now, don't shut this one off. First off, if you're a younger investor, I think you're going to get a lot out of this. I think older investors will definitely too, because I have always a little bent on it there for us older investors. But you're going to get a lot of information today, and I'm hoping I can fit it all into one broadcast here. But let's give it a shot. A lot of links, a lot of resources, a lot of stuff for people that are, especially those that are really kind of zeroing in on what might be the best strategy for them. Now, if you're an investor and you already know your niche and so forth, I think you still get good stuff out of this, because if you're comfortable and you're doing well in your niche, you may want to add another means to generate additional cash flow. So let's get to it. As a general rule, the earlier in life you invest, the more opportunity you'll give yourself to grow wealth. Now, that applies whether you're buying stocks, bonds, or real estate. But if you're wondering whether there's a cutoff age for the latter, the good news is there isn't. You can actually invest in real estate any stage of life. I mean, you could be 90 years old and you could invest in real estate. But, you know, you do approach it a little bit differently if you have a... if you're kind of in a later season in life. So we're going to explore what kinds of investments are available. And there's a lot of them. I can't fit them all into this broadcast, but I will try to give you a good overview. Okay. So first off, you know, does your age matter? No, it really doesn't. I think the main factor is time and how you use your time. That's really the key thing here. You know, a lot of times I say, well, if you're a young dog, you know, a young pup, you can get out there, you can make a lot of mistakes, you can take a little more risks because you got time to make it up and to correct it and learn from it. Those that have been working on a nest egg and building that up over the years, you don't want to take too many risks. You certainly don't want to waste time. So time is a key factor. You know, how much time do you want to spend on this investment? Or do you want to be totally passive about it, for example? And the other major factor is money. Okay, so once you decide, you know, how much time you want to invest, then you've got to figure out how much money you want to invest. And, you know, do you want to get in and just kind of put your toe in the water here? Or do you just want to take a, you know, massive cannonball off the diving board here? So there are different ways to enter it. But I'm going to try and give you some good resources and help you to kind of look at those options. First off, you know, when we're looking at funding our investment, you may say, well, I don't have the money or the extra money to invest. And so, you know, this isn't going to apply to me. Well, it is, because there are various options. Yes, there are those that have their nest egg and did like I didn't do, you know, and really built up enough funds for them to be able to sustain through, you know, the rest of their life. And you may have it in an IRA or a 401k or solo 401k or a Roth IRA or what have you. It could be already tied up in a lot of other investments, annuities, stocks, bonds, you know, just other types of investments. And so those people are looking to kind of sustain that nest egg. I think the ideal situation is, you know, let's say you've got, you know, $5 million, okay? You want to be able to generate 8%, 5%, you know, on that money so that you never really have to cut into the nest egg. You are just generating dividends from the investment of that nest egg. So those funds will be there. And then after you're gone, you know, that can be passed on to your family as part of your legacy. Then there's the people that say, look, I don't really have the extra money. I didn't get a chance to invest properly and to build up, or maybe I have too small a nest egg. Those folks might be looking at other options, and a HELOC, for example, and that is basically a home equity line of credit on your home. If you have a home and it's got equity in it, that's how a lot of people get started. One of our most famous episodes we have is James Kandasamy, and he was on just recently. And he basically was an engineer. He's working at a job, but he just didn't have funds set aside. So he took a $50,000 HELOC out on his home and bought a bunch of single family homes, and he has parlayed that into a multi-family an empire here. He did really, really good by leveraging. And so you can, that's another option. Then you may not have maybe even funds available in your home equity. Then you can look at no money down strategies. And that's very real. I know it's a lot of people say, no money down. Everything costs something. And it does. You may just be time and creativity, but there are, seller financing strategies. There's the possibility of getting people to invest in you and your properties. OPM, they call that, other people's money. There are a lot of other strategies that go into that no money down process. So there are ways to fund it. It's a matter of you sort of deciding where you're going to get the money from, how much you're going to invest. Okay. And then let's look at the strategies themselves. And that's key here. First off, when we talk about investing in real estate, there are several avenues to take. And first, I mentioned to you, I'm not going to be able to hit all of them, but I'll try to give you a good overview on some of the key ones, okay? And I did this recently as well, I dividing between active and passive. So you've got those folks out there that are just dying to do something, okay? They're retired and they're ready to get in and roll up their sleeves and make some money, and there's a lot of ways you can do that. That's an active investor. And then you've got the passive people, the people that maybe have the nest egg. They just want to be able to get that good return, so they're looking for good investments to be able to invest that nest egg in. Again, those are two big generalizations. There's a lot of other subcategories there, but active, that's investing in rental property, okay, buying rental property, generating cash flow from that rental property. That's also fix and flipping, wholesaling, buy and hold, raw land flipping, Airbnb, short-term rentals, commercial real estate, self-storage, deeds and liens. Okay, we'll get into that a little bit here, and hard money lending. Now, some people may say, well, deeds and liens and hard money lending, that's more passive. Well, it does require some time, and you've got to be constantly up on it and following up. And we'll get into the details of why I think that's more of an active thing, but it's probably less active than being a landlord, but it's still active. Passive, and the passive things are like investing in REITs. Okay, REITs, real estate investment trusts. Where you have other people's properties that you're investing in these stock-like instruments, okay? Then there's crowdfunding, a lot of different platforms out there where you can go in and you can invest in houses being flipped or apartments or all kinds of things. You can invest as little as $10 to invest in a property. That's also another good passive avenue there. Syndications. We talk a fair amount about that because there are a lot of folks listening that do invest in syndications, and that's, basically finding sponsors and investing in their projects, maybe apartments, new construction, mobile home parks, self-storage, commercial properties, and you come in as a limited partner, or sometimes you'll come in as a general partner, it depends. But those are sort of more typical passive. So let's take a look at some of these just a little bit they'll dig a little deeper here. All of these are feasible at any age. So you have to really kind of look at your situation and how much time you might want to do it. Buying an income property, probably the most, I would say, time-intensive investment. Becoming a landlord can be a full-time job. I have jumped into it as a full-time landlord. Even though I have property managers around the country that handle my properties, I am very much tied into my properties. Some properties are less intensive than others. I happen to have both C's, A's, and B's, and the C's tend to be a lot more hands-on, where the others tend to be less. You're dealing with tenant issues, and in many cases, sometimes you can hire for larger properties like apartments. You can hire professional property managers that are handling all the day-to-day stuff. All you have to do is run over your numbers on a regular basis, meet with the property managers either by phone or regular contact, and you stay on it in a more passive way, but it's still active. But don't get me wrong, whether it's a apartment building or a single family home. Okay, rental properties are probably the most extensive I'm going to go over here. Single family homes, a lot of people buy single family homes because they know how to buy a home. It's easy. They've bought a home already, and so they're comfortable with that, and so they might want to buy a bunch of single family homes. Sometimes they'll buy turnkey properties that are already rehabbed, tenants in place, property management in place. Or they may take like a BRRR approach, which we've talked about on here, B-R-R-R-R, buy, rehab, refinance, rent, out, and repeat, where you do a lot more of you oversee construction, rehabbing on your property, and you're very active in bringing it up to value and then refinancing it and then renting it out, and you're building a rental portfolio as well. Then there's multifamily, which is pretty much the same kind of thing, except you've got larger properties. Generally, it can be small multis like duplexes, triplexes, quads, which would still be in the same classification as a single family home. It's residential, but then you get 5 units and more and it becomes commercial. And apartments are very different. They do require a different skill set and expertise, but can be very lucrative. Also in the multifamily space, I would include mobile home parks as well. I think those also go in there. And then there's commercial, which is retail, office, strip malls, there, things along those lines. And then there's kind of other odd kind of areas like parking lots, like literally, buying a parking lot, and you make money off the income of people parking in your parking lot. Maybe it's in a downtown area, for example, or raw land investing. You can buy raw land and rent that out, or maybe put RVs on it, make it an RV storage area, for example. You can even go to people that have land along a highway, for example, and ask them if you can put a billboard on their property, and you share the income with them, or you pay them a monthly rent. So there's a lot of creative ways that I would say falls into rental property. I think that the key consideration there is you're going to become a landlord. So you're dealing with the infamous tenants, toilets, and trash, maintenance and repairs, that kind of stuff. And you can self-manage. If you buy properties in your own hometown or nearby, you can self-manage, or you can hire a property manager, even if you live close to your property, or you can invest out of state like I do and others listening to the show as well. So pros and cons of rental properties. I think it's one of the easiest ways to get started. It's got a good long-term return on investment. Over time, you can actually start making more and more as rents increase. As your equity goes up, the value of the properties go up, your net worth goes up. Some of the disadvantages is just being a landlord, and that can be tough. And you have to deal with difficult tenants, evictions, people destroying properties, drugs, whatever, all kinds of things that can happen to renters in your property. The key thing is really building that profit margin, keeping expenses low, and increasing rent over a period of time, and finding and keeping great long-term tenants. That's the key. If you get great tenants, being a landlord is a joy. The more properties you have, the more people you deal with, there's a skill to finding those great tenants. Investment required. I mean, you can do it for nothing down. You can do seller financing. You could even get a VA loan if you're a vet, or other people's money to invest. You could get an FHA loan if you live in the property. And some people do this, the house hack, a duplex or quad or what have you. And they'll, look at, getting a 3% or 3.5% loan through FHA, live in it for a year, move to another fourplex and do the same thing and so forth. So, we're only talking $3,000 on a $100,000 duplex if you do that approach. But normally, you're going to be paying 20-25% down for those types of things. You're always looking, though, to use less cash, because over time it does go quick. Lease options or rent to own, that's another popular one, where basically you buy a home, you fix it up. You offer it to people who might not be able to qualify for a home loan. They pay you probably higher than market rent. They do have to put some money down. Maybe it's $5,000-$10,000, which is non-refundable. And the idea is, over a period of years, or maybe a couple of years, 3 years, 5 years, whatever it may be, they will get to the point where they qualify. They get their credit up. They can refinance the property, and then they pay you off for the property, and then they own it. Yeah, I'd probably go into all the details on that one, but there are pros and cons on that too, and that's going to be listed in the show notes, so you guys can check that out. House flipping, we've talked about that. We've had some great flippers on our show in the past, and basically, you're buying a house that needs that's below market. You fix it up, you increase the value of it, and you sell it, and you make money off of the difference. The advantages are, it's a large, quick return on your investment. It can also be, more creative work, but the disadvantage is really the sort of the higher risk. Work intensive, you've got to oversee contractors or do the work yourself, and then you get taxed heavily on the gain, unless you're able to maybe do something creative with those funds. So, you can get into that for fairly reasonable, but generally you're buying the house. So you don't finance the house in that case. You're actually, going to fund it. You can fund it through hard money loan, or you can use your own cash. And, it depends on where you're buying. You're buying in the Midwest and the South, you could probably buy a house for $50,000 or $100,000. California, we're talking $500,000 to $700,000. So it's a big difference. And so you're dealing with cash and buying that. Or again, you've got a hard money lender that's working with you. So another one, wholesaling, we've talked about that. It's a good way for people to get started that don't have any funds at all. It is very labor intensive. And so, you've got to find, sellers that are very motivated. It may be as a result of a foreclosure or a divorce or tax liens or something of that nature. And so you've got to find those people. And the way they do that is they put these little bandit signs that say, "We buy houses," or "We buy ugly houses," or whatever it may be. And you're trying to find buyers on the other side. So you find a home that somebody wants to sell. You have them sign a contract. You don't literally buy it. You don't, pay for, you don't have a mortgage or go through escrow. They just sign a contract that allows you to find somebody else to buy the property. And you build in a little markup there. You can make $10,000, $40,000, $50,000. It depends on the property, but it's a quick way to be able to get funds. But like I said, very labor intensive to find those motivated sellers, which bandit signs, websites, direct mail, phone, texting, prospecting, all kinds of stuff to try to find those folks. Another is just your buy and hold. And I'm sure you've heard of that, basically, where you buy a property, hold onto it, and sell it for more. It's kind of the old school way that a lot of people think that's what real estate is. But in reality, I think you're better off to buy a property, under market, and rent it out, and you kind of get the best of both worlds. Hold on to it for as long as you want. It's going to go up in value anyway, but at least you're going to be making cash flow. You can also do this with raw land too. It's a great, yeah, if you know how to do that, you can find land and flip that land in a matter of months, or you hold on to it for a longer period of time. Maybe it's in the path of progress or something like that. So, there's some advantages and disadvantages involved in that. Land flipping is actually pretty easy, but you got to learn the rules. You got to understand where you buy, where you don't buy, what you buy and what you don't buy. It can take a little longer. Sometimes you might have to wait on it, that's sort of your buy and hold. Airbnb and vacation rentals, another big one there. I've done this and am doing it. It can be very lucrative. It's a quick way to make funds, and you can be very creative with it. You can take your own property and you can just rent out an extra room or a guest house, or and you may even have an RV on the property that you can rent out, or convert a garage. You could even stick a teepee in your backyard and rent it out. I mean, there's no limit. You could take your kid's treehouse and convert it. I mean, one of the highest yielding Airbnbs is a treehouse. Okay. So, but you can also buy a house and make that into an Airbnb. You can convert maybe some of your apartments, if you own an apartment building, into Airbnb. That's what I do. There's also called arbitrage, where you actually find an existing apartment building. Maybe they're having trouble getting tenants in, and you approach them and say, hey, I'd like to do an Airbnb in your place, and I'll share the profit with you. And they're not running out. So, they've got a high vacancy, for example, and you can convert it into a lucrative venture for them as well. You can partner with other Airbnbers that have funds, and you can partner. So you don't always need a lot of money. You have to furnish it, and that can cost, anywhere from a couple thousand to $7,000-$10,000, depending on the property, to get it furnished. But you can get real creative. If you have raw land, you can become an Airbnb. You can put a yurt on it, if you know what a yurt is, a big kind of weird tent from the Middle East or wherever it's from. You could put a trailer on it, an RV. You could put a tiny house on it. You could even take a tool shed and on a piece of raw land and rent it out. So there's some, I think there's some fun stuff with Airbnb, and it can be lucrative, but it can also be a big headache because you're dealing with multiple tenants, and that they don't always treat the property right, and you've got to have strong rules, and you got to have a house cleaning crew, and there's a lot of other elements, unless you're cleaning it yourself, which I'm sure that wouldn't be that much fun. Commercial real estate, kind of a whole different caliber. This is really for people that have the resources to do this. Office buildings right now, not a good place to be. Unless you're moving into sort of suburban office buildings, and that's something that's actually starting to boom right now, but that's mainly like retail, triple net, like buying a building and leasing it out to CVS or some bank or something along those lines, where they're paying you a huge sum and you really don't have to do much. They are doing everything. They're paying utilities, they're paying your taxes, doing a lot of other stuff. There's the big box ones where you'll have maybe a grocery store and a bunch of other stores tied into it, other little stores like barbershops and so forth. Then there's like buying dollar stores or buying a property that becomes a dollar store. So, there's a lot of variety there. You can do that. It's usually a little more cash intensive, and you need a pretty strong balance sheet to be able to invest in those higher ticket items. Self-storage, another one. You don't have to deal with tenants. That's a real key advantage there. You do have to have security. You've got to have an on-site manager. You need fences, a security system. You have to allow for control and access, cameras, video systems. And you just hopefully that nobody brings anything illegal in there, a nuclear bomb or drugs or whatever. So, you have to be aware of what you're doing and who your clients are and so forth. Deeds and liens. We've had some great shows on this. In fact, all of these topics, I'm going to have links to shows. Like if you say, yeah, I really like that Deeds and Lane things. Well, there'll be a link to a couple of great shows that'll give you the basics of how to get involved in that. But basically, you're with deeds and liens, you're going to a third party, you're buying old deeds that maybe they're defaulted, maybe they're somebody had, maybe it was a hard money lender, he doesn't want the property, and he'll sell you at a discount the deed. So you get these deeds, you collect from the people that are responsible for paying those deeds, or you take over the property. And we had one guy on, he's called the Lien Lord, and I'll have a link to his show. And he bought a second mortgage that was valued at $125,000, paid $60,000 for it. It had a 14% yield, and the borrower was really great, didn't miss a payment. And then a borrower was able to refinance it, and he got a check for $125,000. So he made $65,000 on that. And liens are similar, but they're like a security instrument that enforces the note. So, nobody can do anything with the deed if there's a lien on it. And if you hold the lien, then you control the note. Okay, let's move into passive. Some of the passive or more common passive investments, buying REITs, real estate investment trusts. I talked a little bit about that at the top of the show there. And basically, you are, REITs are companies that own or operate income-producing properties. And the good thing is you don't have to own, a physical piece of the property as such. You don't assume, the expenses either, but rather you're buying shares that are backed up by the tangible assets that are in that REIT. So it's a good investment. There's a lot of people like REITs because it's also fairly liquid. They can, cash out as they need to. They have access to the great yields you can get in commercial real estate without having to spend, a lot of money on it. Good returns, definitely higher than the stock market, no corporate tax. There's some good advantages. You do have the dividend taxation you got to deal with, though, on the negative side. Interest rate sensitivity is that they're tied a lot to the market and the treasury bills and so forth. They tend to be more effective as long-term investments, even though you can cash them out if you want. Another is syndication investing, and these are individuals and groups of individuals referred to as GPs or sponsors or general partners who purchase large properties like apartments, mobile home parks, office buildings, retail, so forth. And what they do is they partner with other investors who are looking for good returns. So this is for the people with the nest eggs, and they come in as LPs, and they can invest in a great, high yielding opportunity, that can produce pretty good returns. I mean, the stuff I'm seeing is anywhere from 5 to 12% right now, and that's just the preferred. You also have IRR, internal rate of return, that can be even higher than that. So definitely some good things, but the advantages are you generally get higher yields than most other available instruments, and it's backed by real estate, which is solid. Disadvantages are you really need to carefully vet your sponsors and know that they have experience and that they have a track record. Preferred rates are not guaranteed. It depends on the cash flow of the apartment community. When COVID hit, there were a lot of people that had to stop paying their investors their regular monthly or quarterly payments. So you do have to vet well and understand the risk involved. Well, that's the overview right there. I went a little bit longer than I usually do for my Friday shows. And real estate investing, it isn't an option limited to people of any certain age. I think that's the key thing here is anyone listening here can do pretty much any of these, provided they have the funds and the time and the resources, what have you. But you can get in when you're young or you can start when you're older. Either way, the key is to assess your options and see which best align with your risk tolerance, your time commitment, and your resources and how much you have to invest. But know this, you know, real estate can be a rewarding investment for retirees. And if not, I wouldn't be doing this show. If you missed the boat on it during your working years, and you saw all these guys that just made a ton of money on real estate, especially coming out of the last great recession, it's not too late to get in on the action and to be able to not only generate some great cash flow in your retirement years, but also to create that legacy that you can hand down to your family. Well, that's it for today. And, you know, like I mentioned, there are going to be some great links here and resources tied to this, so you can find out more about any of these areas that I went into, and that'll be in our show notes on the Old Dogs website at olddogsreinetwork.com/blog, and you're going to look for the episode entitled "What is the Best Real Estate Investing Strategy for Older Investors?" So until next time, remember, cash flow is king and real estate investing the means. Until next time, keep moving forward, and may God bless.
Thank you very much for visiting the Old Dogs REI Network. We would greatly appreciate if you would stop by iTunes and let us know what you think of the show. We would love if you could subscribe to the podcast, give us a 5-star rating, and write a review. The more ratings and reviews we receive, the more visible the podcast will be to others. Thank you.